Think for a minute about the many different electronic devices that you have that you rely on. Probably a computer, maybe you've got a smartphone, maybe you've got a tablet, MP3 player, or maybe all of the above. And whether you have two devices or 10, there's probably data on one that you'd like to have on another, or maybe on all of them. And that's where syncing comes in. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Peter Greed, independent computer consultant, with us. And he provides great information about everything going on in the world of computers and software. And he does that in part through being here and then also on at his site, infostar.com. Always great to have Pete come by. And thanks once again for joining us.
Always great, Larry.
We'll let our listeners join in. You can phone in at 1-800-642-1234 with your computer question. But let's talk about syncing for a minute to start the show, Pete. You're syncing your what are you really doing? You're getting all these devices kind of to work together, aren't you?
Well, it's actually been going on for a fairly long time. Outlook is probably the most popular program for, I would say, you know, you could say personal, but a lot of business use because it's got a calendar in there for scheduling. It's got your contacts. It's got email. It's been used for a very long time. It was included for free with Microsoft Office. And when, you know, email became popular, started growing as an application, it was right there, you know, at the forefront. A lot of people remember using Outlook Express, and today people use Microsoft Live Mail. But Outlook is out there, and for a very long time, people in the business environment would, when these smartphones started coming on board, you had a desktop, you had a portable, and you could have all those devices syncing so that if you were out making an appointment and you had your phone with you, or if you had your notebook, you could have it sync back to your desktop.
Yep.
And the syncing doesn't happen in a flash, or back then it didn't happen in a flash, but you know, you had to be logged on to the network. There had to be some kind of connection that you would make. So with your smartphone, you know, make sure you have Wi-Fi enabled so that when you're in a Wi-Fi area, your phone will sync. And for most people today, that's not, you know, something that gets overlooked. It's mm-hmm. usually
yeah.
because you save, for a lot of people, you save money when you're synced to or you're hooked up to your Wi-Fi. So when you walk in a Wi-Fi zone, if you're using Wi-Fi, you're not using your bandwidth on your phone. And mm-hmm. some people are limited. And especially today, they sell these plans where they say 4 lines and 10 gigabytes of data, which, you know, includes email, messaging, web access, streaming videos and music and so forth. So, you know, making sure your phone is Wi-Fi enabled. Also, when you're close to your computer, if you have Bluetooth enabled and your computer is Bluetooth enabled or has the ability to do Bluetooth, not all desktops do Bluetooth. Depends on the age, the vintage.
There are probably people that are saying, what the heck is Bluetooth?
Bluetooth is a communication protocol that they came up with that allows devices to communicate with each other within a reasonable range of, let's say, 30 feet. They say 33. I've seen 50. Depends upon the environment, but it's a simple way for them to communicate with each other, and all they have to do is be in close proximity, and it has to be turned on, and permission has to be granted between the devices. So, if you've done this before, you might see a Bluetooth passcode where you have to enter in, you know, something you maybe the device is already preset with like 1, 2, 3, 4 or 4 zeros. And then once you sync the Bluetooth, then they, you know, continue to communicate. It's pretty popular with speakers. I've got a Logitech little boom box. To me, it's great because I can pretty much carry it in my pocket if I want and take it out and while I'm working, put it up on the shelf and sync my iPhone to it, play music, and if I get a phone call, the music's getting interrupted, and I know I've got a call coming in. So that's how Bluetooth, you know, works with computers. And like I said, depending upon the vintage of your desktop, you may or may not be able to do Bluetooth. There are add-ons, there's software, and there's these little Bluetooth dongles that you can plug into a USB port that would allow you to do Bluetooth. So in terms of syncing, you know, the different devices, you have smartphones, tablets, netbooks, laptops, virtually anything that would contain information that you want to sync. Most people like to have it on, you know, with their smartphone because that's what they're carrying with them. You know, just making sure all those things are enabled and looking at the software that you're using and making sure, you know, what you want synced on those devices is coming through because there are defaults and then there are options. Mm-hmm. And it's really, you know, Android, the iOS from Apple, and then, like I said, there are applications like Microsoft Outlook. You know, looking through those preferences and deciding what you want coming through to those devices because the devices do have limits. You know, the mm-hmm. iPad has a memory limit. Your phones, Android, some of them you can expand, but they all do have limits, so and they do take up space when you sync things.
And there can be some downside. There's one downside that I discovered driving my daughter's basketball friends friends to a basketball practice, and the one girl was talking, and she was saying, well, Mom said we were going to do this, but in fact, what she really is going to do is that. And I said, well, how did you find that out? And she said, well, she synced in. She says, I somehow wind up getting her text messages that she sends to Gloria, the next door, you know, their good friends. So mm-hmm. she says, I get in on all their strategy sessions. So there's a downside if you're, yeah. Well, it's an upside for her, but a downside for the mother. Yeah. I have yet to tell the mother. Are there any other, I mean, are there downsides besides something like that?
Well, you know, knowing the limits of your device so that you don't fill them up.
That's true.
I mean, you know, you can keep taking pictures and adding music to your devices and stuff like that. You know, email and text message and some of the other things you might be syncing up probably don't take up as much space, but just realize, you know, the limits that you have and what you're working with. They're always going to keep getting larger and larger, and we get more care. I don't know if you want to call it carefree or careless with managing our files, but, you know, with phone, I don't remember which phone it is, but the size of the megapixels as far as the picture quality, it was, I think it was like 40 gigs or something one of the phones came out with in the last year. And that's, to me, that's kind of like an insane level of, you know, density for a picture. It's a great quality, but it's going to sure eat up a lot of space very quickly, and you just got to pay attention to those things.
So the actual process of syncing them in is?
Is really just being communicating with either Wi-Fi, your network, or the device is plugged into another device that has access to the network. And Bluetooth, again, is a way of networking, communicating between devices. It's not considered something that would be for running applications across a network. It's just for, it's really for just handshaking and saying, okay, you've got what I want and I'll take it. And, you know, that's how they communicate.
And replacing, say you got an old device, you're going to get a new device. Adding a new device isn't really probably all that big a deal.
No, in fact, when you sync multiple with Bluetooth, usually the device that you've used for syncing devices with Bluetooth, like a smartphone, will list all the ones that you successfully synced with and will remember that. Oh. And unless you have some kind of problem, you usually don't have to redo them again. So it becomes seamless, and you know, it's one of those things where you should kind of keep a list of passwords or passcodes somewhere so in case you have to redo it, because typically we forget those, and sometimes it hiccups and you have to redo it.
Vincent in Racine has a question for you. Hi, Vincent. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I used to use AddThis to share articles with friends and other people. And about a month ago, it stopped working. And I fill out the form that they have their send to, send from, and then the code. And it says, thank you for sharing, and it goes, but it never arrives. It goes in limbo someplace. How can I restore it?
So so you said the application is called AddThis?
Yes. It looks like the symbol looks like this Swiss flag. It's red with a white cross in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Have you tried, is it a web app, or is it something, it's on your desktop that you're using this for and you're trying to share it with?
Yeah, I installed it on mm-hmm. my desktop.
Okay.
And I used it a lot before.
Mm-hmm. So when I have problems with applications, I usually do several things. Number one, if I'm having a problem, you know, I try to identify as close, you know, like you said, it's stopped working. The quick fix sometimes is just simply to do a system restore if you're using a Windows system, or uninstalling or reinstalling the app and seeing if that helps. If it's...
That did not help.
Okay. If it's, if there's an update available, applying the update sometimes fixes it. The other one is to go to the company's website and see if there's like a frequently asked questions or a forum or discussion area where they are covering those kind of problems, because you're probably not alone. And if you can't find anything that, you know, is similar to what you're experiencing, then I try to contact that company to make them aware that there's a problem.
I took it to the Geek Squad, mm-hmm. and they couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, what operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Windows 7. Sometimes Windows, and here's another thing, both Windows and if you're using an antivirus program, there might have been something where the antivirus program flags something that that program is doing and has basically disabled it. So you might want to try and turn that off temporarily and use the application and see if that helps. And then sometimes Microsoft applies, you know, security fixes or things that they put out there. Not so much with Windows 7 anymore, but, you know, it's worth a try rolling back one of the last, you know, when you knew it was working, is to try and see if there's any way you could do a restore back to that before those yeah. were applied, and then run the application. Because I've seen it in where the order in which things are installed.
Oh,
I mean, I don't remember if you remember the story with my son being in Whitewater, and he said, "Dad, my computer is just like in this endless reboot." And it was a Microsoft update that caused his computer to go in an endless reboot. So, you know, things like that do happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if something on your system is running interference to that application.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 2 o'clock, independent bookstore owner Dan Golden joins Kathleen to talk about great books to read during the summer. You can find out what's hot right now, as well as some old favorites that make a really perfect summer read. Kathleen Dunn finds out today with you at 2 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we're talking about a lot of things that are going on here. In the land of computers with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Oh, Pete, always great. I had a great Facebook question from Lowell. What about syncing a Microsoft or Android phone to an Apple computer?
It's really the information. So if you have the app or the software, you know, when people say app, it's really just, I don't want to call it an acronym for software, but that's what it means. Mm-hmm. Software application. It's really the information that you're sharing. So as long as there, to me, the best word is a conduit, there's a pathway, you know, there's a way to share that information. So the application on the devices has to allow it to be pulled in or imported and converted to the form that you need to read it and look at it on that device. So it's application dependent upon the data that you want. So if you don't have a way of syncing the data that you want onto the device that you want to receive it, you have to find one. And there are a lot of incredibly intelligent people out there that write apps. So if it happens to be on a device, an Android or an iPhone or whatever kind of smartphone you're using, you just need to put in the preferences of what you're looking for in your search in their stores of applications that are out there. And, you know, there might be ones that are, you know, 99 cents or free or 10 bucks. I've paid $20 for an application that allowed me to make my iPhone become a Wi-Fi hotspot, and it worked great.
Yeah,
and it was absolutely worth $20. So, it's really data dependent upon what you want on that device, and then it's finding a path, an application to allow you to pull it into that device.
John and Rhinelander has a question for you, so let's go there. John, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Now, don't laugh when I tell you that I'm using Microsoft XP yet.
No.
And
I'm not laughing. I think okay. It's great. If you can justify whatever you're using for a computer, it's really solving the problem. You know, you don't have to buy everything.
Latest and greatest.
The latest and greatest. Yeah. If it works for what you...
My problem with it now, though, is... One evening I was using it, and I was able to connect to the internet, and I was able to get my email. The next morning, it shut me down, and I couldn't get it. It said the IP changed. It didn't recognize who I was. My Wi-Fi works fine yet. All my internal workings when I'm working offline and everything work yet. And my provider, Frontier, can't tell me what's wrong, and I called Dell, and they can't tell me what's wrong. And I'm wondering if you know what happened.
I'm trying to remember. I think you can use... How long has this been going on?
It's probably been about a week now. It's given me trouble that I can't connect to the internet or email. Everything else works.
Did they talk to you at all about trying to do a system restore?
Yes.
And?
Didn't work.
Didn't work. So you tried it prior to that day?
Yes, I did.
And you said the IP address. Well, the IP address you're hooked up to a router because you said that you're using Wi-Fi.
That's correct.
Okay. Did they have you reset your router? Or just restart it?
Well, yes, they did.
Okay.
And also, my cable was plugged into on my router. You know, there's different ports on
right.
it, and it was plugged into E4.
Uh-huh.
When it stopped working, that went dead.
Okay.
It wouldn't flash like it did before.
Okay.
And they had me plug it into E3, which was flashing, but it still didn't help.
Okay. Well, if you're, you know... There's no guarantee that these devices stay perfect, you know, forever. Have you? It doesn't sound to me like you've tried replacing the router.
No, I have not tried replacing the router.
If there's a problem, and you haven't tried replacing the card, you said Wi-Fi works coming from the router, but you're having a problem with your desktop communicating. Have you tried replacing the network adapter?
No.
Okay. That's probably the next thing that I would do.
The cable itself?
No. There's a network where you're plugging into that desktop computer.
Sure. Okay.
You need to get another card to go into that computer to give you another port to plug into. It sounds to me like something happened to that network adapter. They call it a NIC card. Network interface card and you probably want it, you know, they're let's say they were $20. You can buy them at, locally, you could buy them like at Office Depot, Staples, Best Buy. They're not very expensive. But that's what I would probably change first before I would look at the router being the source of the problem.
Give that a shot first. And thanks very much for calling, John. Yeah, sometimes just turning it on and off.
Yeah,
happened to me. Renee said, well, turn it on and off. And I turned it on and off and it worked.
Yep, you can do that. If the network adapter in his computer happens to be one that you can pull out and plug back in, that might fix it. But with it being the XP vintage and the age, it's probably, it could have, I mean, I've seen that often enough that the network adapter does go bad, and it's not that expensive of a fix, and not as much work as if you pull the router out and then have to reprogram that.
Nick in Green Bay, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just screwing around with this, not a big deal, but I got a dumb TV, actually a smart TV. And it supposedly has Bluetooth on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was screwing around one day, just playing around, trying to sync it up to my phone. I just can't get it to find the phone. Any suggestions?
Yeah, sometimes devices don't really, you know, Bluetooth is not like 100% perfect. I do have problems with some of my Bluetooth devices. What you might want to try with the TV is see if there's an update to the firmware.
Oh, sure.
Okay. And try doing that first.
I haven't did that in a while, so it might be that.
Yeah, and see if that helps. I've had problems with routers, and I've updated firmware in routers, and all of a sudden that fixes a problem. So, you know, having the latest firmware might fix it. The other thing is maybe doing a search on the model of your TV.
I haven't done that yet.
And the Bluetooth device that, the smartphone you're trying to sync up with, and see if there are some other people that have come up with solutions, too.
Hmm.
Like I said, I was just playing around, but I just wanted to see what would happen.
But you bring up a good point, which I didn't mention earlier, because it doesn't happen. It happens often enough where the Bluetooth devices don't sync up, and for whatever reason, you feel like you're hitting your head against the wall, and it can get frustrating because it isn't perfect, but it's great when it works.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Plus, it sucks your battery, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That thing will suck your battery on your cell phone quick.
Yep. Yeah. Bluetooth is, when you're in range of a device for Bluetooth, if you're not using it, you can turn it off.
Turn it off, yeah. Well, I've got something sort of a similar problem in that my TV, I can't get Apple Works, and I can't hook it to Netflix for some reason. I have no idea why. So,
have you tried updating the firmware or checking out the TV
I've got
site?
I've got it. I think the firmware is updated.
Sometimes the sites are going to tell you, hey, we've identified a problem, we're working on it. So, they'll come out with an update.
Maybe I'll go to the site. I haven't done that.
Or there might be some kind of preference that is running interference. They tell you to shut it off and then restart it, and then it works.
There was some whispering under my breath last night as I was sitting there. I can't share the conversation that I had with myself when I was working. I'm trying to fool around with it. Stream in Sheffield, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We have two iPods, three Androids, and a Windows 7 machine. And we're using Dropbox to sync pictures mostly and videos and things. And it works too well. It wants to, as soon as we get in the Wi-Fi, it wants to suck everything off everybody's thing, and I want to be able to control it so that everything doesn't end up on the computer, because some of the stuff we don't necessarily need to share.
Mm-hmm. There are preferences in Dropbox in terms of who you want to share things with, and, have you gone into any of the preferences and made changes to them?
I have looked at it, and I just haven't had time to figure it out. I didn't know if you had a quick fix. Can you have more than one Dropbox account?
Sure.
Or could I have, like, one on my tablet and one on the computer? Because that way...
Yep, that was the other thing I was going to suggest, is that you can selectively do that by just having separate accounts. They're not going to restrict you. What they're going to restrict you and where they want to be paid for is if you're using too much of their resource in terms of storage. So, That was the next thing I was going to mention, is you could selectively move things to different devices just by having different accounts. But you just have to be aware of the limitations.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, as you get older and you have to keep relearning all these new things, it sure does suck up some time.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yes, yeah. It does.
It'd be nice if you could have one. What's the guy that Ronco set it and forget it advertising? Yeah. It'd be nice if there was like one thing you could just go in there and set it and forget it.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I'm teaching these broadcast classes where we have our software, our audio software changes about every year, and then just having to relearn all that stuff so that I'm a little smarter than my students in terms of telling them how to use the equipment. Usually they bypass me inside of about 15 minutes.
That's not very long.
But in the meantime, just learning it for me is a lot longer than 15 minutes. Oh, man. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. Great to have him along. Thanks for listening in. You can phone in a question at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Brian in Winona, Minnesota. We just lost Brian in Winona, Minnesota. So let's go to Joe from Dickeyville. Wonders what your opinion is about the new netbooks that use Chrome operating systems.
I've looked at them, and they're limited in storage. I don't know how expandable they are memory wise, but they're small. They're not designed to take the place of a laptop. As long as you're comfortable working with Google's applications, Google Docs and Gmail, and you're okay with the limitations of the hardware, they work fine. It's when you look at, installing other apps that you might need, you really have to consider what you're using it for.
Yeah.
If you're using it for a travel device, it's probably great. If you're using it just for email and writing, simple communications, you don't have to do anything fancy with it. Streaming video, music, it works great.
Yeah.
But it's when you're looking at other applications that go beyond their operating system, and for the hardware, that's where you have that's what you have to consider. So, in the price range, they're pretty similar to other netbooks that run Microsoft OS. So, it's just, but then it becomes a personal preference.
A Facebook question from Pat, who said some time ago Java was having a problem. Is it okay to enable it and allow updates now? Kind of got away from it.
Yeah. Java's not super popular. It was steamrolling along for a while, and then it's kind of dropped off. If you've got something that you're using it, install the latest update and enable it. If you're not really using it, you don't really need it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just depends, again, on what you're using it for. There are some JavaScripts that are out there on the web. I know my site has it, and if I'm tinkering with my desktop computers and stuff, sometimes I don't have it turned on, then I can't see my little scroll
right
window. And that's JavaScript. But there are some devices out there that use Java for their applications, and so it just depends on what you're using it for.
Katie in Minocqua. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Question concerns Macintoshes. I have got an iPad, Macintosh notebook, laptop, and a 13-year-old iMac. Now, my problem is I love my 13-year-old iMac, and I can do things on my 13-year-old iMac that I can't do on my other devices at this time. So my problem is that I can't get a printer to work with my iMac. I've bought three different printers trying to get them to work with this old machine. And I finally called the company, and they said that I needed to buy a new desktop, that there wasn't going to be any printer that would work with that machine. So my question is to you, to your knowledge, is there a place where I can purchase a printer that will work with this old machine that I like so much?
Probably on eBay. You'd probably find, you know, if there isn't a local shop that that has, like, refurbished printers or printers that they've reworked. Because we, where I work, we used to have an issue where we had line printers, dot matrix printers that were really fast, and they were very costly, so we would constantly repair them. And then finally, when we decided, hey, we're done with this and we're just doing laser printers, I actually gave them printers and said, mm-hmm. here you go. You know, you got a lot of parts you can use for other people. Mm-hmm. So I would probably, you know, eBay is a great place for older equipment. And I wouldn't be surprised if you could find something out there. I know we use laser printers that actually don't make anymore that are workhorses, and we buy them off of eBay because they've been reconditioned and recycled. But the one thing that I don't remember how that Mac, what do you use for communicating with a printer? How is it using an Apple port, or is it using a serial? How is it talking to the printer? What kind of cable is it using?
I don't know what the name of it is. I'd say probably Apple port.
Uh-huh.
Why couldn't she just email it to or have it device?
I was getting to that. One is try and talk to the printer in a generic mode. So, you know, mm-hmm. like just plain text and nothing fancy. That's one way. But the other one is, if you can use your Mac to email or, you know,
final document, like email the document to one of my other computers.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the other, what do they call it? Not quite a shoestring network, but pretty close.
Yeah.
You walk it from one to the other. And then
you could keep using that 13-year-old iMac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a possibility. And the eBay is a possibility, but what brand name would I look for if I was looking on eBay?
Let's see, probably ones that have made them before. I would think Brothers would probably be one manufacturer. Panasonic would be another.
Yeah.
Trying to think what other ones out there.
Brothers is the one I think would...
Yeah, Panasonic, Oki Data would probably be one that you might find out there that would be compatible.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Katie.
I don't know if Oki Data is made anymore or if they got bought up, but I'm pretty sure that was one of the more popular ones when I worked at Computerland that we sold for Mac systems was Oki Data. Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Katie. Thank you. I want to get Jim in Minneapolis a chance to join us. Jim, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have an office computer that I believe is Vista, Windows Vista, and I use Outlook, and I kind of live by my calendar. So I kind of became a serious problem when I got a new iPhone 5, and it wouldn't sync. And with my old iPhone, I was able to at least plug it in. And through iTunes, I think, I was able to synchronize it. But I can't get it to synchronize for anything. And everybody says, oh, just use the cloud. Of course, that's way over my head, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing seems to work for me.
Yeah, the cloud actually might be the easier solution because you said you're using Vista. And
right.
Vista was a problem for Microsoft, and when they released it, it had issues. It was almost it was a big mistake for them to release that product.
And I think I'd agree with you on that.
Yeah, and it could very well be the roadblock that you're having. So it might be easier if you're not going to make the change as related to Vista's to try and work with the cloud to sync what you need.
How do I get the cloud onto my computer, though?
You just set up you have to set up an account. Well, you already have an account if you set it up with your iPhone. So then you just use iTunes on your phone or on your desktop and just, you know, set up your account.
Huh. Okay. All right. I'll give it a shot.
You know, set up your preferences. And, you know, for those people that don't pay attention to backing things up, I would say at a minimum, because Apple gives you about 5 gigs of space. And at a minimum, if you're using an iPhone or iDevice and you've got, like, contacts and probably the most important thing, your contacts and your phone book, but you can set up your iCloud cloud on your iPhone to back that up at a minimum and have it do it every day versus if you hook it up to your desktop. You can do that also with iTunes, but you can also back up everything else collectively, and it might be more. But I'm just saying it's nice to know something's being backed up off of that phone, and if you haven't taken the time to do that, you probably should.
There you go.
Yeah.
We have Marit in Madison. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yeah, thanks, Larry. Listen to you almost every day, so first time calling you in, so I'm kind of a little nervous. But last night, I have a MacBook. I think I bought it in about 2007, and last night it just turned off. And then when I turned it back on, it turned itself off after about 10 seconds. And either way, I know I have to take it in somewhere, but my biggest concern is if I've fried my hard drive and lost all my pictures.
Hmm. That wouldn't be good.
No.
No.
Well, let's see. Do you have an external drive that you hook up to it and run Time Machine at all?
I don't.
Okay.
You know, just speaking of backing up, and I definitely have lacked on that.
Yeah, probably the easiest thing for, I would say, all computers out there is if you get an external device, external hard drive for a Mac, and just turn on Time Machine, it basically backs up your drive and allows you to drill back in time and pick files out and things like that. Now, I know you don't have that now. Probably the best thing to do is to take your machine into a qualified place that knows how to work with Macs and, you know, tell them you haven't backed it up and you're willing to, you know, you could go out now and get an external hard drive so that you could plug it into the Mac, and give that to them and say, if you're able to bring, you know, resuscitate the machine, please, you know, back it up for me so that they at least get that going. In terms of what it could be a problem, are you seeing anything on the screen when you turn it on or?
Yeah, and I kind of looked online on my phone last night, and it was kind of important of what you see and for how long. Mm-hmm. So I do get the Apple symbol, and then I get the time wheel.
Okay, that's
on
good.
On the gray screen.
Yep, that's good.
And then
good.
I get the blue screen,
mm-hmm.
and then it turns itself off.
Okay. Sometimes there are ways to restart the Apple device with a sequence of keys. When you bring it back up. So you may want to do a little bit of searching. Something may have just happened at this, you know, trigger it to be in the mode that it is now. And it may be a simple fix. So, you know, you might want to do some more searching online for that. Because I've had tech people tell me with different models of computers, laptops and things, just to hold these sequences of keys and turn it on. And all of a sudden it comes back up because it resets something. So it might be just a simple hiccup. If that's the case, still don't hesitate to go out and, you know, wait to go out and get, you know, an external drive and turn on Time Machine so that you've got your backups done.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Marit, for calling. You did a great job, by the way. You were a good caller. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Peter Green, computer consultant with InfoStar.com. He visits with us very regularly. Always great to have him come by to talk about what's ailing our computers, you can join in at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post right there. Don in Portage has a question for you, Pete, so let's go to Don. Hi, Don.
Hi there. See, you were talking about Outlook Express earlier. Now that Microsoft doesn't service XP, is Outlook Express safe to use there or not?
Sure, yeah, it's safe to use. Basically, what Microsoft and other companies that are in the same, you know, that create software applications are saying, we've reached the life cycle, the end of the life cycle of the product, so they don't support Outlook Express, they don't support XP. It doesn't mean that they are no longer useful. It's just that they've moved on with their operating system, and then they've renamed Outlook Express and added more to it to fit within the newer operating systems, and they just decided, hey, we reached our programming limits with Outlook Express and with XP. It's evolved into Windows 7 and now Windows 8. Outlook Express is evolved into Windows Live Mail, and then they're just keeping that going, you know, on newer platforms. So it still works. It's just that there's just no more updates or any enhancements that are going to be coming to those products.
Hmm.
So they call it sunsetting. Say the sun is
goodbye.
Set on the software.
Steele in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes, speaking of a sunsetter, that's me. I just read the other day Oracle is going to have a big update coming in the middle of this month, and they no longer support XP. So people like me, and so I read a while back, the IRS was still using Windows XP for the latest collection of taxes.
That's
so,
not good.
No.
Folks, is it time to change? And I just started reading the tech site about 10 months ago, and that's when I learned about this Windows at, I'm a Stone Ager.
Yeah.
Well, I think, XP is, I forgot exactly when they said that they were no longer supporting XP, and now, of course, they've moved on to Windows 8, and it's 8.1. Windows 7, they say, is going to be supported for quite a while, and 7 is a much more stable, better platform than XP, and you can still actually buy it. You know, it's offered as a solution when you buy new systems. Not all of them, but it still is offered as a solution. So I'm surprised we haven't had a question as related to 32-bit support and 64-bit support, but the limit is basically with 32. With XP, it's 32-bit, and there is no 64. I believe, I'm not sure if there was ever a 64-bit version of XP, but what was going on is the evolution of not only the software and the operating system, but also the hardware. And yeah, if you look at how much memory we have on our systems today, the difference between the 32-bit and the 64-bit is how much RAM is supported in the hardware. So if you're buying new hardware,
yeah,
but you're trying to go back in time with XP, you're not really benefiting from the advances that have taken place in the hardware.
No.
So if you're using XP on older machines, that's fine. It's, you know, taking XP and trying to get it to run on newer machines, you're really losing the benefit of the things that they've enhanced the hardware with.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Good. Thanks, Steele, for calling. Scott in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Yeah, my question today is, you're talking about syncing, and mm-hmm, I guess there's a little confusion on my side. Could you explain the difference between syncing,
mm-hmm,
backing up,
yep,
and file sharing as related to Office, if you go into properties or you have the opportunity to take a certain Office file and you want to share that file?
Sure, yep.
And the reason I'm asking this is I'm looking at adding a local, on my network, my cloud drive.
Right.
Basically a server type drive.
Right.
And it offers applications within there where you can do your own backup, and then you can also create a whether you want to take files and share them to a Dropbox, or you can create separate user access to that who have limited access to certain files that you have on that cloud drive.
Yep, great question.
And I'm just wondering what the difference between all those are.
Okay, so let's do the first one, syncing. And like I mentioned earlier, if you were out on an office call and you're visiting with a client and they said, okay, let's make a new next appointment for next Monday, the 14th. So you go on your calendar on your smartphone and you put in, okay, we're going to meet at 10 o'clock Monday the 14th. So you put that in, and now that's data that's in that application in your calendar that when you go back to your office, or a laptop using either the same application or something that would allow that data to be imported into the application. So you now are syncing that data with another device, okay? So you've made that appointment, and now that appointment shows up on your desktop back in your office. So you can continue to work there and benefit from that. So that's really data that's syncing up and being used in another device. When you back up your software, you're backing up everything. You're backing up all your contacts, your entire calendar, and it's in a file format that if that device failed or your desktop failed, you would be able to do a restore of that file onto a new system or new device and have all of that data available for you to use again. So backing up is not the same as syncing. Syncing is accessibility to data. Backing up is backing up a file, so if there's a crash, you're able to restore that file. File sharing, go ahead.
Just to review that. So when I back up, basically I'm taking from some source, whether it be my main computer, and I want to back that up. It's taking all the files or whatever I determine I want to back up, all those files, and no matter whatever state they are when that backup routine takes place, it's just going to, so any additions or deletions. So it has a source file base that it's looking at and then just duplicating that.
Correct.
In a sync mode, it doesn't matter whether you add or delete. It's going to make a standard across all devices.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. If there's any modification or changes, it's just modifying it so you can see it on that other device. Yep. And then file sharing is giving a permission to allow those files to be shared with other users and other devices. So in a network environment, you need to be a member of the same group or domain, and then you need to have the folder, and the files within the folder are then given permissions to be shared. In Dropbox, you basically create preferences for who you want to allow to be shared from that Dropbox. So you could have a public Dropbox, and then you could have a private Dropbox, and pick and choose who you want to allow to share privately, and then in public, when you put the stuff out there, it's whoever you just point to it and say, hey, I met this guy or met this girl or whatever, and I've got pictures from our party we just had, and you want to share it, you put it out there, and then they can go get it.
Yep.
Or if you want to be more in tuned with just the individual, then you just have to communicate with their Dropbox account and say, here, it's just for you.
Yeah. I was thinking about our calendars. We have our calendars. We have a family calendar, and then each of us has a work calendar that is separate. But when that family calendar, when I enter something, it shows up on my phone, for example, and daughter Emily's phone, wife Renee's phone. Mm-hmm. So we all, because there are so many meetings and events going on we're not any, I think we're fairly normal when it comes to that, but there's a lot, and having that synced in is really wonderful.
I think the important thing to realize with file sharing is once you give permission to, for example, there are peer-to-peer networks out there. There's, Napster was, you know, with the music sharing. There's Views and LimeWire and BearShare. I don't know if they're all still going, but they have folders that you basically say, okay, for that that peer-to-peer network, I'm giving permission for any files in that folder to be shared. That's file sharing. So other people, yeah, while you're on that peer-to-peer network, those are the only files that they can see. They can't see anything else because you're not sharing it with them. So, you know, if you hook up a network router for your network in your home, and then you have a network-attached storage device, you can give permission to share files off of that network-attached storage, but not the whole device, just a folder that you share with other people in your family.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, and I just noticed in Windows 7 and in Windows 8, because I have two different devices with, you know, the two different operating systems, is that you notice when you open anything in an Office suite, now you see the sharing. Mm-hmm. So it's the same as they had before in the older versions of XP, where you had to go under properties.
Correct.
And yep, and go there. Yep.
And
with that, we're going to have to sink in with the news coming up in just about less than a minute here. Our guest, Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. News coming up, and then Pete will be with us right up until 12:30. So you stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. You know, sometimes technology gets a bad rap, like so many things. When it's working well, you don't really notice it. But when it's not, ooh, that's when we call Peter Green. Larry Mueller here. Pete's with us today from Infostar.com. He's an independent computer consultant. Always great to have him along. And here to answer your computer questions. At this time of the program, every time he's on, we take a look at a list. He's got a top 10 list of sites that we can go to on a variety of topics. And Pete, what did you come up with today?
The next time we do this is number 200.
Wow.
For, yeah, 200 of these top 10. So this is for $199. The first, if you go to Infostar.com and go to either top 10 archives or current top 10, this is the list. First one is Psych Central. So PSYCHCentral.com, and very comprehensive, searchable mental health resource, includes a very dynamic forum section. Number two, we were just talking about this in the break because I'm a hockey fanatic. It's called ColtHockey.com, and it's a company that manufactures hockey sticks based on nanotechnology. So what they've done is applying the nanotechnology coating the bottom third of the stick, including the blade, with a very thin coating of metal, which doesn't make it completely indestructible, but does a pretty good job of preserving the stick for a lot longer than normal hockey sticks. So if you're a hockey fanatic, you might want to check that out. And they also use this next one, which is called Kickstarter.com, and it's an online resource that helps provide a way to acquire seed money for projects and ideas. And they were able to use that site effectively to get their company off the ground. Number four is called CrewToolsApp.com, and it's a program, hopefully it's something for people out there that are doing landscaping or home remodels that require job estimating and contracts, but it's for it's a device for smartphones and iDevices to help them get rid of most of the paperwork. Number five is called cloudmagic.com, and this is a new email application for organizing your digital communications, and this might be something that might take the place of Outlook for some people. Number six is sportingcharts.com, and it's sports statistics graphically charted for all major sports. So if you want to see charts on sports stuff, that's where you go. Number seven is a site from a writer named Jerry Beck, who is specialty is animation. And it's called cartoonresearch.com. And it celebrates the classic cartoons from all over the world with special emphasis on Hollywood studio animation. So if you're into cartoons, this is probably a site you want to check out if you don't know about it. Number eight is medhelp.org, and they claim to have the world's largest health community, over 12-plus million members, and they have a huge forums list and searchable medical research, medical information, medical apps that they review and so forth. Number nine is Internet Slang. So if you're looking for a place for computer terms, abbreviations, and acronyms, Twitter stuff, Facebook, whatever, that's probably a good place to start. And number 10, the truthaboutcars.com is an automotive industry resource. Got the latest news, product reviews, editorials, and podcasts. And I got one more because I don't know if you talked about this on the air or if it was mentioned, but Tesla Motors announced on June 12th that all of their patents belong to you.
Yes.
And it's I put the link there out on the my website with a public letter from their CEO, Elon Musk, who made
that
announcement.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
It's hopefully it's going to speed up that whole technology process.
I think that's what the message is. You know, they've got enough on their table to do what they're doing, and they're basically saying, you know, if you can jump in on it,
jump on in.
I mean, look at how many cars are produced annually. I mean, there's no way based on their niche that they've created for themselves that they're keeping up. They just can't keep up with what the world needs in terms of the global needs. So,
well, David in Madison has a question for you, Pete. So let's go there. He's been waiting a while. David, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, hi, Larry. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a question regarding printing resources. I have a MacBook Pro and an iPad Air. And I have used the MacBook Pro for some time with a portable battery-powered printer, the Canon IP100, which is a great little printer that is battery-powered, can connect via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or directly to my MacBook Pro. But what I'm really in lack of is a printing solution for direct printing from my iPad Air to a portable battery-powered printer. I'd love to be able to use the IP100, but I haven't been able to find a solution for direct connectivity to the iPad Air and the iPad 100, or the IP100 is not AirPrint capable, and I've yet to be able to find an AirPrint capable portable battery powered printer. I wondered if maybe Pete knew of any such animal.
Well, I haven't personally searched for one like that, but I would think companies like HP, Epson, Canon.
They all seem to make a lot of desktop computers. Mm-hmm. Nobody that I've been able to find makes a portable battery-powered one like the IP100 that's AirPrint capable. And I wondered.
Maybe there's a niche manufacturer like Colt Hockey is doing it for hockey sticks. Yeah. Maybe there's a. Have you done a search for what your requirements are?
I have, and have come up empty.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm drawing blanks. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, if you can't, I mean, the biggest printer manufacturers out there, and ones that would probably want to jump on Apple's, bandwagon with talking to their devices, I would think Canon would be the top one, yeah. And then Epson. And then HP.
Checked all three of those, and mm-hmm. none of them has yet, as far as I know, have a portable battery-powered printer comparable to what I have. And there are no other workarounds for the iPad Air IP100 combination mm-hmm. that you're aware of that would allow me to print other than going through a local area network on my MacBook Pro, is there?
Not that I know of. No. What I would probably do, though, is you might want to contact those manufacturers and let them know that you're looking for it, because until they see demand for some of these devices, they hold off. They might actually have something, and if they see enough people interested, they'll release it. The other thing is the Consumer Electronics Show, CES. You might want to look in the
look and see what they've got
when the next show is coming up, and see if there are any manufacturers out there that for printers, and contact them. And then another site you might want to take a look at is cnet.com, and look at, you know, do a search specifically on their site and see if you can find something.
Yep.
I've been there, tried that route.
Have you tried Engadget too?
No, I have not tried that yet.
Yeah, you might want to look there as
well. Yeah, give it a look. Good luck, David. Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Deb in Sturtevant, hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a Vista laptop that I have almost 1,000 fonts in that I use for scrapbooking.
Okay.
How can I transfer those fonts onto a Windows 7 laptop?
I would there's a font directory on your system. I would probably do a Google search on that. I believe there is a way for you to import those into the Windows 7 system. So what you might want to do is copy them, unless the computers are networked together and then you share that folder, you might want to copy those fonts to like a CD or a DVD and then do the...
External drive,
you know, whether it's external or to a thumb drive,
yeah.
You know, anything that to get it,
okay.
So that when you put it on the Windows 7 system, you're going to do an import into that folder and it'll read them in and then register those fonts so that they'll be available on the other computer.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
That's the way
Good
to
luck.
Do it.
And there's probably a YouTube video out there. So I'm, you know, it's that's been going on for very, you know, what she just asked about is something that's been out there for a long time. I remember doing that probably 10 years ago. So I had all my fonts from one system pulled into another. Yep.
Harold and Superior, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, good afternoon. Before we get to my problem, I just have a couple quick comments here that I can't resist. When you were talking about syncing, you know, I've been computing over 30 years, and I read all of these backup terms, and my head starts swimming in lingo there, and some of them mean the same thing. And what I try to do is to create imaging, and then, okay, let's find the best imaging backup programs there are. But that's not my issue today. The other thing is I guess I would warn people to stay away from Windows 8. I just think it's the stupidest thing Microsoft has ever done, and I've been with them since first version of DOS. It's bad. I think it's horrid.
Did you update to 8.1, or did you try changing the user interface to it?
Oh, sure. I've got 8.1, and I've gone through about 8 different startup menus and coming back to the free one.
Yeah.
And I still like that the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's maybe okay for those who have the pad type deals, but for a desktop, I don't know. My opinion.
Yep.
Anyhow, I went to, I installed a screensaver from Giveaway of the Day, which is a great site, and nobody was having problems with it, so I thought, well, okay. And next thing you know, my computer is not booting, and I don't think it's a screensaver. I think it's just sheer coincidence, because what I've done, I've pulled it will boot to a black screen with the cursor, which I can move around. And that's it. I get it. It says Gateway, and then a little while later, there's a totally black screen cursor I can move around. And
Have you tried bringing it up in safe mode at all?
Because
what I would do is when you turn the computer on, and after it's gone through some of like the computer hardware information, it's right before Windows tries to start up. If you hit the F8 function key, you should get a choice of safe mode or last known good boot. You might want to try picking last known good, you know, boot up.
I don't get that far at all.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying your system is booting into the Windows operating system, and you need to invoke the F8 function key before it starts loading, so that you have that option. Because it seemed like what's happened is something is kind of, you know, caused a file corruption or something is off. And when you go into that menu choice that I said, you can either pick safe mode or last known good boot configuration, it will try to start up. And then once you get that, you should probably go into your system tools or properties and then create a new restore point.
Familiar with about all of that.
Okay.
It certainly doesn't seem to be the same or anywhere near as easy to get into BIOS now with Windows 8.
Yeah, they're a little fast. They're a little faster than the older systems.
Yeah,
doing that.
Yeah,
I guess that is part of the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
Well, what I did was, I finally, after trying everything, and I mean for hours and hours, and not getting into it, I pulled the hard drive out and tried with the different drives in there that I had, and that didn't work. And so finally I pulled those out, and I was trying to just boot to the to the BIOS or to a CD, and it wouldn't. And I've got several different bootable CDs that should boot, and it won't boot to a CD. It won't boot. I can't get into the BIOS no matter what. I pulled the CMOS battery out, let it set about 30 minutes. Now, I did not do the jumpers because I didn't have the...
I think you're really overthinking this. You know, I would have gone back to the original drive and done what I said, because I've already done that recently with the system, and I know that that works. Other than that, you can do a scan now /SFC to have Windows check all the different operating system files and see if those are all intact, and it will tell you if it can do a repair or not. Otherwise, you have to do a reinstall of the operating system.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are really all the options. All the other things that you tried were like way overthinking it and giving up on the main drive.
Yeah.
And I never would have done that.
Don't give up on the main drive.
Yeah. Good luck.
Jim in Colorado, thank you for calling. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Peter and Larry.
Hi.
My CMOS battery died on my powerful desktop, and I replaced it. But now my ATG Communications Manager, my tethering software, gives the following message. This, let's see, here we go. It is a window from Microsoft Visual C++ Runtime Library, and it states, it gives a path to ATGCM, and says this application has requested the runtime to terminate it in an unusual way. Please contact the application support team. But I did, and that they don't know anything. I reinstalled the ATTCM, a large software, but it made no difference. Coincidentally, I used BitMeter, which I presume you're familiar with, and it shoots a similar message called System Argument Out of Range Exception. The added or subtracted value results in an unrepresentable date time. So maybe it's a C++ runtime problem, and I know nothing about it. Do you?
And this all stemmed from just replacing the battery for your CMOS.
Yes.
Are
we out for longer? I was only out for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
And C++ is...
Well, it's programming language,
yeah.
And it's stating that it's having issues with that. Boy, the only thing I... Like you said, you contacted the software provider, and they said they don't have a clue. I would probably just be Google searching, you know, what solutions are out there and just try to re-ask the question until I came up with something, because... if the application provider doesn't know how to point you in a solution, it's, you know, I mean, they're the ones responsible for using C++ to begin with.
Yeah. They've got to know.
Yeah.
If they don't know.
Yep. And that, One, you know, you stated two issues, so I mean, I would be looking for both of them to see if one of them is going to finger the other.
Yeah.
You know, if one of your solutions is going to help provide a solution for the other. It sounds like they're very similar.
Yeah. Good luck, Jim. Michael in Madison, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Peter.
Hi.
I know this is a PC show, but I've got an Apple.
No, it's fine.
If you could help me.
No, I use Mac and PCs. I've got an iPhone in my pocket, tablet, and Mac Pro and Mac desk stuff. I use all sorts of Mac software and Windows stuff, so whatever you want.
Well, I appreciate it. Yep. I work with a company that likes PC software on my end.
Mm-hmm.
And I just talked to the technical people, and they said, you can probably use Chrome as the browser, and that should probably work. Have you heard anything like that?
You know, I don't know if I have Chrome on my Mac. I usually put Chrome on my Windows machine. There's no reason why you couldn't run Chrome on your Mac. I use Safari all the time, but there really shouldn't be any reason. You know, if there's probably an operating system neutral company out there, it would be Google.
Yeah.
Because Google is basically using the web internet conduit to get to their software applications. So I see no issue at all with using Chrome on a Mac. In fact, today I'll probably download it and put it on it just because I don't even know
somebody I know is using it. I can't remember who.
Shouldn't be any reason why.
No,
I talked to somebody else who said they used a PC this morning on our company software, and he said there was just a garbage. I said, geez, I did the same thing and no problem on my Apple Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Chrome is a fast browser because it's really there are no frills. There's no, you know, they didn't have a lot of baggage they brought along with them. You know, Internet Explorer brought a lot of baggage. I don't know if you remember the first version of Internet Explorer was actually Microsoft Word, and then they just kind of band-aided like a add-on to make Word a browser. And then they finally came out with Internet Explorer. Cello, you don't remember all those Cello, Mosaic.
Yeah, Mosaic.
Netscape.
Yeah, Netscape. Yeah. That's pretty recent, actually. Netscape isn't that far back.
Yeah. See, if there was a trivia game or a show, I'd probably do pretty well, Larry.
Well, Michael, I appreciate your call. And of course, Pete, it's always great to have you come by.
And maybe we should have a trivia show.
We could, or at least have a question or two and give away a fabulous prize.
Yeah, I would be all for that.
All right, Peter Green, he'll be back with us again, and we will talk with him some more about your software and computer issues. Great to have him along, and as I said, he will be back. We and lots of Facebook. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of the online questions. There's tons of them, but you know, kind of that's the way it works. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is going to be with us tomorrow, talking about the debate about grain and pet foods. She's got some definite thoughts about that. New guidelines for diagnosing house soiling behavior in cats. You stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.